Hello and welcome into the KE Report. We're joined today with Sean Broderick, analyst at Weiss Ratings and editor of WealthWave Report. Sean is always a wealth of knowledge on a lot of different sectors. I just want to start things off, Sean, today with a look at the bounce back in the commodity sector in general, and in particular, our beloved gold and silver, precious metals, have had a nice bounce since the low 2 weeks ago where we had that flash crash. What do you make of that, and what do you make of the precious metals setup at present?
Yeah, well, if you look at what's happening in gold and you look at what's happening in the U.S. dollar, it's kind of a mirror image in the past few days. So maybe it's that. It could be a lot of other things that I've been talking about to subscribers at wealth-wave.com, you know, that we are seeing demand from the central banks. We're seeing demand from China. And, of course, the old supply-demand situation hasn't really changed. So, you know, maybe it's gold's time. Cyclically speaking, this should be a good time of year for gold. So we just went back past the usual bottom. It should go higher from here, but I'm not really making any strong bets on it. I mean, we own gold miners, sure. But I'd like to see gold get above, say, 1830, 1835 convincingly. Now, if it's still in the same up and down pattern that it has been since at least April, and maybe for all of this year, frankly. If it's still in the same up-and-down pattern, that would be the wrong time to buy. But I'm just looking for a little more conviction in the precious metal space before I add to my positions.
Do you think that with gold and silver and with the commodities in general, that anybody is putting any weight on this taper narrative that's coming out of the Fed? We've got Jackson Hole later this week. We've got the September Fed meeting right around the corner. Do you think that that's going to play into the inflation narrative? Do you think that's going to play into how people view the commodity sector?
I'm not sure if people know what to make of the taper. For one thing, is the Fed just talking the talk, or is the Fed going to walk the walk? You saw the market wobble badly just when the Fed hinted at this. When the Fed actually does it, what's going to happen? Things could go so bad that they have to stop tapering. It's really a weird situation that the Fed is in, you know? I mean, they see the economy improving, so they want to remove the stimulus that they've had in the market from the market. However, the market's gotten so hooked on it that anytime they talk about removing the stimulus, the market freaks out. I wouldn't want to be in the Fed. I'm sure the paychecks are nice, so it's not like we should pity these guys too much, but it is kind of a perplexing situation, and I'm not sure how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm sure their paychecks are nice too, but I agree with you. I don't think I'd want to be in the situation. If they taper and there's a taper tantrum and the market reaction, then they're going to have to pull it back. And some people think if they start that process and have to reverse course, it could be what boosts not just gold and silver, but the whole commodity sector. But there's no doubt about it. The commodities had a good run the beginning of the year. They've had about 2 months of pullback. So whether it was copper, nickel, oil, everything was pulling back. And over the last week or two, we've seen a bounce back, in particular in the battery metals. So I know you just had a talk at the Money Show, and it was based on the battery metals space. So bring us up to date on a few of the points you made during that talk and some of the things you think is important about the battery metal sector.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in it. I got a lot of questions afterwards, which is always good. You know, it's nice to hear that people are actually thinking about these things. And basically what we're seeing is a two-pronged super cycle. It's in commodities, but there's also one in technology. And the more technology advances, the more of these minerals it needs. But those minerals, the suppliers are already being squeezed by the super cycle. That is, we had so little investment in actually mining these minerals for so long that, of course, prices were going to go higher anyway. And now that technology is demanding more and more of them, it's really a boost for all sorts of things, whether you're talking about lithium, but also things like copper, nickel, zinc, graphite, cobalt, rare earths, more. Tin, for example. You know, there are many minerals that are part of the electric vehicle revolution, but also the new energy revolution. And so we're definitely seeing some ramp up here. So I gave like a overview of like what's going on with this whole big cycle, but I basically focused on lithium because it's in the name of the battery, the lithium ion battery. And things look great. We've added some stocks in that space. They're doing very well, and I expect them to do much better. And I had to keep updating my presentation because I started working on it last week because, you know, I always like to work ahead. I'm not one of those students in college that did the entire report the night before. I like to actually have it done. So I had to keep updating it because we saw things like QM came out with its earnings report. I mean, they're expecting Market demand growth in the lithium space increased 40% this year, year over year. That's insane. I mean, that's just ramping up. And we're also seeing prices squeezed higher in China, in Europe, here in the U.S. as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think the entire battery metals space looks very bullish. And some of the easiest stuff to play is lithium, also things like nickel and copper too, of course, because those have the actual tradable stocks. There are some stocks which, let's say, FinTwit is really excited about, but they have no volume. Be very, very careful what you buy. Whenever you buy something, you have to be able to sell it down the road, right? And if there's no volume in, say, an OTC Pink stock, you are going to be in trouble when you need to sell it and you can't. So be very careful that the stuff you're buying has volume in it. I mean, even if you're a longer-term investor, that's great, but you never know when you'll have to sell. And so that's one thing that I want people to be aware of.
That's sound advice, Sean, because I was involved in the lithium sector, have been for over a decade, but back in 2010 through 2012, when there was an exit out of the space when the prices fell, it was very hard to get out of some of those stocks, especially the illiquid OTC-listed stocks. So definitely you want to be choosy when you're looking at it. What are the main stocks or ETFs that you're looking at in the lithium sector then that you could point people to that are safer names in the space or at least the kind of companies they should be looking at?
Well, I will tell you about the four that subscribers to two of my publications own. And then I'll give you my lithium watch list. This is all available in the presentation, which is probably the Money Show will have it available sooner or later. Anyway, well, let's start with the ETFs, right? Because some people don't like to buy individual stocks. There are three good ETFs to play the EV battery boom. One is the Global X Lithium and Battery Tech ETF. Symbol there is LIT, which you can either look at Get Lit or else Lithium, you know, either one. That's a good symbol. The next one is the Amplify Lithium and Battery Technology ETF. Symbol on that is BATT, BAT. And then there's the VanEck Vectors Rare Earth Strategic Metals ETF. And the symbol on that is REMX. Now, these all focus on different parts of the whole sector. You know, one's really focused on lithium. One covers basically the whole clean energy space. That's what the Amplify Lithium and Battery Technology ETF does. And then the Rare Earths ETF focuses on rare earths. All three of them tend to be China heavy. The least China heavy would be BAT. So that's both a blessing and a curse because it's very, very hard to buy some of these Chinese stocks in the U.S. So these ETFs give you exposure to it. But on the other hand, when China cracks down on its tech stocks, like it's doing now, it can send these things lower. We actually saw that recently. These stocks were hurt, even though they're not among the ones being targeted by Beijing. So I actually saw that as a buying opportunity, and but we could see more of it. So that's something to keep in mind. So those are the ETFs. For, let's see, one stock that's doing very well for us is Livent Corporation. And the symbol there is LTHM. It's one of the world's top five lithium producers. It has a mine in Argentina. It also has a lithium hydroxide facility in North Carolina. It's expanding both of them. And that is a producer, and it's expanding. Definitely, it's a good one to own. Another one would be Lithium Americas. That is partnered with a Chinese company on a brine project in Argentina, and it's on track to start production in mid-2022. And they're already working on their second stage. And Lithium Americas is also advancing its Thacker Pass project. That's in Nevada, and that's the largest known lithium resource in the U.S. So that's a good one, too. There's another company, by the way, called American Lithium, which I think people confuse with Lithium Americas. And, you know, that's a much earlier stage explorer. Its stock has been moving along recently. I'm wondering how much of it, I mean, it had some good news, sure, but I wonder how much is due to the good news on Lithium America. So be careful of what stocks you're buying. And a third pick would be Standard Lithium. Now, it has a new lithium extraction technology, which it says will revolutionize the industry. Of course, you'd expect them to say that. But it has partnered with a company in, like, Arkansas, and they built a demonstration plant, and they actually demonstrated that it works. Now it wants to build stage one of a real production plant So that's a little earlier stage, but, you know, that looks pretty good too. And then there's SQM, which has a Spanish name, which I can never pronounce, Sociedad Química y Mineral de Chile. And what this does is it gets that beautiful lithium out of Chile, and it's forecast to quadruple its net income from the end of last year to the end of 2023. Big expansion there. So those are the four we own. Other ones that people should consider are Orocobre, which just completed a merger with Galaxy Lithium. That created the world's fifth largest lithium producer. Pilbara Minerals, that owns a huge mine in Western Australia. Neolithium, I actually own that one personally. That's a potential producer in 2023. Piedmont Lithium, that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and it's working on a scoping study for its North Carolina property, and it has a project up in Quebec, but it seems to be getting in fights with the locals in both locations. So it needs to work on its community relations. That's why it's further down my list, even though it's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And then finally, Sigma Lithium Resources, that's an OTCQB stock. That's in Brazil, and it's targeting production for the second half of 2022, which is quite close. So, you know, I mean, that's a nice universe. Now, two of those stocks, which is Orocobre and Pilbara, those have main listings in Australia. So in the U.S., they're just OTC pink stocks, but they have enough volume that it should be your keep safe money. But if you want to risk some money on them, as long as they have volume, it's good. And I think the likelihood of those two uplisting are higher than average. So most of the time, I don't like to go below OTCQX. But whenever we talk about battery metals, we're going to have to consider that, because many of these are very, very small stocks. On the bright side and on the flip side, it's those small stocks that can hit it out of the ballpark. So that's another reason people should be looking at this space.
Well, Sean, that's a good list of companies in the lithium space. And in full disclosure, I do own Lithium Americas. Orocobre I owned until yesterday, where I trimmed it for profits after holding it since 2016. So I've had a fantastic run in it. And I also own Galaxy Resources. So I figure once the merger is complete, I'll pick Orocobre back up through Galaxy. And I own Pilbara Minerals. And those are all solid names that you listed, as well as the ETFs. And people can always go in and deconstruct some of those ETFs if they want to look at some other names in the space. But a lot of great comments there. Let me ask you a question. We touched on this briefly last time, Sean. There's three real ways to play the lithium sector as far as mining stocks. There's the hard rock miners, there's the brine miners, you could say, which is more of a chemistry process, and then there's the geothermal or the oil and gas extraction, the lithium extraction method, which you mentioned with Standard Lithium. So mm-hmm. which of the three ways are you most comfortable? Do you like all three of them? Are there things investors should be cautious of when playing in each of those three sandboxes?
Well, lithium hydroxide, that's what you really want, right? Hard rock production costs roughly half as much as brine. So if you're looking at it from a sheer cost point, hard rock is probably the way to go. That said, I'm a person who owns Neolithium, and like, you know, they're not doing hard rock. But then beyond that, you have to look at whether the company produces lithium carbonate or else lithium hydroxide. They all want lithium hydroxide. How much is the conversion process? I think people need to look at the total cost curve for any project. You know, how much is it actually going to cost to produce? I see some great charts going out there showing where any particular company is along the cost curve. And you definitely want to be on the lower end of it, because things look really good right now. But you know what? It was just 2 weeks ago that Bank of America came out and shook everybody to their socks by saying that they thought there was too much supply coming on in the next year, and so prices were going to crash. Now, the market seems to say they're wrong, but that really shook a lot of the weak hand. So things will go up and down. Prices are going up now, but you know they'll go down at some point. I just think that they'll zigzag higher. But on those zags lower, you know, the ones that will hold their value probably will be those companies that are on the lower end of the cost curve. That just, you know, kind of makes sense. So definitely look at like what the entire cost picture is for any project and keep that in mind when you're investing.
One other thing before we wrap up, Sean, on this talk on lithium. If we back up the clock, let's say back to 2014, 15, 16, we heard over and over again that there was no room for any new entrants, that the big three at the time were the SQM, Livent was actually called FMC back then, and then Albemarle. And after that, we saw Talison Lithium go in, which is the Greenbushes, which was bought by Tanqi. Ganfeng came in, which is a huge player in the lithium space. Neo Metals and Minerals Resources in Australia brought their mine into production. Then Galaxy, Orocobre. We've had Bacanora that's getting close to coming into production. There's a lot of these things that are coming into production. Is there a point where the space gets too crowded for any new production? Or do you think, based on these estimates we're seeing for demand, that there's still room for more?
Well, the point you're making is the point Bank of America was making, which is they were seeing short-term too much production was going to come online. I think that the market is saying maybe, but the new contracts that are being made are actually being made on much higher prices, so a little overproduction in the short term won't matter. What we have seen is that demand over the longer term has just soared beyond anybody's estimate. And what we are seeing is we are seeing global society slowly make the shift from one kind of energy storage to another kind of energy storage. And that's a massive shift. I mean, that's a massive megatrend. So I don't know what'll happen longer term. We also haven't discussed the fact that there are different kinds of batteries being composed, which was actually part of my presentation. And like, you know, what could happen that way as well. So there are things that could replace the lithium ion battery. None of them are really close, but their proponents keep saying, oh, this is going to be the next big thing. Maybe it is. So what we're looking at is a nebulous future, which is why I tend to choose shorter term projects. That list that I gave of the ones that are on my watch list, those are ones that have production in sight. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, maybe the year after, but they have production in sight. When you see these tiny explorers who don't have a real plan yet being pushed, they might work out eventually, but maybe not in this cycle. So I think people should keep that in mind as well. I like lithium here. I think it's going higher. But nothing goes higher in a straight line. There will be zigzags. If the zag lower is longer and bigger than many people expected for any particular reason, then, you know, that will really hurt some of the weak hands. So keep those things in mind. The future isn't fixed. It's moving around all the time, especially where new technology is involved. They're coming up with new things all the time. We aren't sure. So we'll just have to see how it goes.
Great points there as we wrap up, Sean, and I really appreciate getting your insights. And maybe in the future, we'll do another episode on just the different types of batteries that are proposed. We've got the vanadium redux batteries, the silicon-based batteries, some of the salt batteries. So fuel cells with the hydrogen, there's a lot of exciting things happening in the battery space. But I like your point that right now you want to pick the companies that actually are going to happen in this window, in this cycle, while the wind is in their sails. And we appreciate getting your insights here on the KE Report and sharing your time with us. We'll put a link to the Wealth Wave underneath this editorial. And we just appreciate you being on the KE Report, Sean.
Well, thanks very much, Chad. And congratulations on your Orocobre profits. One of the most important things about investing is knowing when to take profits. So kudos to you.